Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. I take your questions today on the Charlie Kirk Show. I dive deep into that with Jack Posebic from Human Events at humanevents.com. Thank you for supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Help us hire more staff and strengthen our team at charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Let's start with this one. Hi, Charlie. Why would billionaires rig the election for Biden when Biden wanted more of their money while Trump did not? From Joe. I'll start with that and then Jack can dive into it. This is kind of pairing off this question of Mark Zuckerberg putting in $419.5 million into the 2020 election.
Zuckerbucks.
Yeah, and part of it is not necessarily because of tax rates.
By the way, Charlie, can C3s do that legally?
Well, no,
absolutely not.
It's just so funny. If anyone ever has a question of, you know, nonpartisan nonprofit interference, I'm going to send them a link to the Center for Technology and Civic Life. Where
exactly.
25 out of 26 of the counties that they played ball in Georgia were overwhelmingly Biden counties, and the biggest distribution of resources were Biden bellwether counties.
Something tells me, though, that Janet Yellen, right, because she's Treasury, mm-hmm. which is IRS, something tells me she's not going to be investigating CTCL. I wonder why that is.
No, that's not going to happen. And so this is not about tax rates. This is about power. They wanted to be on the right side of the government or the companies that were going to potentially going to regulate them and break them up. Now, in some ways, Biden has deviated from this, from some of his Federal Trade Commission picks of people that are at least posturing that they're going to break up these companies. But more than anything else, and I want your opinion on this, Jack, Zuckerberg had to try to quell a staff revolt within his company from leaks and dissension, not the fake Facebook whistleblower, but legitimate type dissension and rebellion, because they deep down believe that Facebook was a co-conspirator in getting Donald Trump elected in 2016.
Well, she, you know, Frances Haugen, who I call her the Facebook Karen, she's a big part of this, actually. And this is not a Facebook whistleblower. It's a Facebook whistleblower operation.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's doing, we can see that she's clearly a Democrat left-wing activist. Whistleblowers, what they do is they're supposed to come out and tell you something nefarious that the company, organization, institution is doing and then lying about to the rest of the country. That's not what she's doing. She hasn't revealed any information that nobody knew about Facebook before. What she's doing is coming out and saying Facebook needs to censor more. And this ties back to the ESG stuff. This ties back to power. This ties back to, even though, right, Zuckerberg can puts in this $450 mm-hmm. million dollars for the election, it doesn't matter, because this is about what there are four essential power nodes in the United States right now. There's four essential nodes. There's Wall Street. Now, previously, there were three. It was Wall Street, D.C., and Hollywood. Right. And now the fourth one has arisen over the last 15 years, and that's Silicon Valley. So
yeah,
those are your
companies.
Those are your four big power nodes. So what you're seeing now is a fight basically between who is going to be in charge. And basically they're looking at the Silicon Valley saying, hey, you guys are running away with this. You're making off like bandits. You've got too much money. You've got way too much influence, way too much power. So Mark Zuckerberg, that $415 million, you have to kind of look at that as a way of him sort of. That's an olive branch. That's an olive branch,
right,
to D.C.
But it's not about tax rates, because people say,
Tax rates is about you.
I know, but some people are saying, understandably, I don't get why they want Biden, who's going to raise their taxes.
Biden's not going to touch any of their money. Biden's not going to do anything. You think those guys have, first of all, Mark Zuckerberg doesn't have an income, right? Mark Zuckerberg's income, he has a net worth. right? And his money, if it exists anywhere, it's not on. He's not Scrooge McDuck, where he's got his money like out in some vault somewhere. He's got it in Cayman Islands. He's got it tied up in different, obviously in real estate.
True.
We've got Bill Gates, of course, buying up all the farmland.
It's in stock certificates, right? For Facebook. Right. Stock certificates, it's always about what is going to make Facebook more powerful.
100%. 100%.
Those are
right?
very important.
The tax rate, marginal tax rates going up, is about the upper middle class, the middle class,
people that
and
have
the, and the working class
businesses, right. Which is usually small businesses,
and preventing yes. you from being able to attain that kind of wealth. By the way, because they want to keep interest rates low, so it's essentially, if you pair it with inflation, it's negative interest rates. You're going to keep low. They don't want you owning anything. They don't want you generating wealth. They don't teach financial literacy in this country for an obvious reason, because they want to keep you ignorant of this stuff. Because when they say, oh, we're going to raise the tax rates on the 1%. No, it's not about the 1%. It's about the 0.01%. They're not paying. Warren Buffett doesn't pay an income tax. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
It's all a con. It's all a con.
Well, and part of it, they might pay capital gains tax only if, though, they don't have comparable losses to show against it, right? And so this is important because
they game the system to make sure they do.
Right. Well, and so Bezos and Musk and all these guys, they will have solar panel farms or whatever,
right,
to offset the losses.
Right.
So
this is why Solyndra exists.
Yes.
Right. We know it fails because then that offsets the losses.
Farms
and
solar panels to not pay tax. Okay. Let's get to the next
question.
Charlie,
before we do that, Wall Street Journal, the FDA has delayed a decision on clearing Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine for 12 to 17-year-olds while it looks into the risk of the heart condition myocarditis.
So it has been cleared by the FDA?
Has not.
Has not.
Has not. They were looking at, Biden was talking about this. Biden was talking about this coming out potentially today, potentially as early as Monday. Now the FDA is pumping the brakes on this, saying, look, this myocarditis, we're getting signals from where? Oh, by the way, that's right. The VAERS database, because where else would you get it from? They're getting information that says, I don't know. It looks like there's some problems with the myocarditis.
Well,
the same thing they told
to
everyone
question.
Else to shut up about.
So Nathan says, Charlie, my friends do not believe me when I say there might be problems with the vaccine. How do I combat that? So this is actually an answer to that. So build that out even more.
Right. So this is a great answer to that, because remember, we've been told, you know, there's that sort of meme of like, just trust us. Just trust us, bro. Just trust us, bro. Just take this. There's no problems. When, of course, all last year throughout the election, you could play the videos of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden both saying, I don't know if I'd trust a vaccine that came out with only 1 year of development. Take the politics out of it, right? Take the politics out of it. When something is introduced like this, think of technology. Think of like a new iPhone or a new iPad or something like that. The first edition is always buggy, right? Everyone says, never get the 1.0, you get 2.0, you get 3.0, et cetera, mm-hmm. right? We're in a situation like that. However, this isn't an iPhone in your pocket. It's not an iPad in your hand. This is your health. This is your body. And guess how many of those you get? You get one. You only get one. I know the transhumanists have a different, you know, opinion on this, but you still get
one. What is transhumanism?
So transhumanism is this idea of, you know, it starts off very small with like wearable technology, but then it gets into what Elon Musk is doing with Neuralink. It gets into this idea of merging man and machine. And I don't mean like Darth Vader. I mean actually sort of uploading your consciousness as an AI, uploading your memories. And I don't mean like Legacy Box.
Yes.
I mean like actually converting your own body into part machine. And it's very, very far beyond. And it even gets to the point, it dabbles in eugenics a little bit, this whole movement. And they just had a huge conference, but I think in Madrid, Spain, talking about all this and how they want to move forward. And again, it's a situation where people are driving down the road of this thing. But to use that old Michael Crichton saying, you know, the scientists are spending so much time wondering what they could rather than wondering if they should.
And they're going to try to create human cyborgs very, very soon. And I just want to remind everybody, we've been doing a partnership with Alliance Defending Freedom. You guys go to charliekirk.com. That's charliekirk.com. Click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner. In fact, I think we have some sound from my friend Mike Pompeo, who is talking about ADF. And you'd think a church would be the last place that would have to even worry about religious freedom. But over the past year, we've even seen churches, Jack, you know this, be forced to close during the pandemic. And many public figures, including former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, has something to say about that. Play tape.
There are those who would want to deny us the capacity to practice our faith and to worship in the way that we choose, or if we choose not to, no faith at all. We need to make sure that this nation remains that beacon of religious freedom for the entire world, to model how the dignity of every human being created in the image of God can be reflected by the capacity for those individuals to practice their faith.
ADF is fighting for us, so let's help them out. Go to charliekirk.com and click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner, charliekirk.com, or phone your gift to 888-716-7461, 888-716-7461. The war against big tech rages, but there's opportunities to fight back, one of them being SquadPod, a private communication platform built to keep your conversations private. Visit SquadPod to download SquadPod today. Invite your friends, family, classmates, or team, and take back control of your communication. SquadPod.com. Hey, Charlie, can you dive deeper into Joe Biden's sinking approval numbers? Really represent? Does this mean Americans actually disagree with his policies and socialist agenda? I'm under the impression that they have no intention ever to run Joe Biden for president again. And this is a run it into the ground and replace it. People will forget about it. And Joe Biden will be known as a Woodrow Wilson style president who changed the paradigm and the framing of American politics and will be known as the man who is willing to do what can be done when you actually don't care about the political consequence associated with it. Jack has
didn't Woodrow Wilson go nuts?
Woodrow Wilson lost his mind.
Total nervous breakdown.
But he was in my opinion,
his wife was kind of like running the show.
She ran the show in 1918 and 19.
I bring this up for no reason. I don't bring this up for any similar thing.
I'm a student of Woodrow Wilson.
Might be going on today.
And
that would be.
If you understand Woodrow Wilson, you know a lot.
So Woodrow Wilson explains it very clearly. He said, we're going to build an organic administrative state.
That's
correct. This state is going to take over the permanent role of a government class.
Well, and change who we are as human beings.
Right. So the bureaucracy is going to run the government, and then Congress and the president and the judiciary, that's going to be just some window dressing on top kind of thing.
Well,
it's a very German idea,
well,
by the way.
It's German historicist,
German idea.
He partnered with John Dewey, who went to Johns Hopkins. And so this is what happens when a college professor becomes president. And by the way, if you guys want to learn
Princeton
about
University.
Woodrow Wilson. Yeah, he ran Princeton and was a professor there. And
Mark Milley went to Princeton too.
Only PhD ever to become president is Woodrow Wilson. If you want to learn more about that, go to charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. They have the best online courses about all of this. And if there are some things that Jack and I are talking about, they're like, what is that? I don't get it. Almost all of this can be sourced back to the amazing wisdom of our partners at Hillsdale College, charlieforhillsdale.com. I take their online courses. I'm getting Jack to take them too. Jack probably already knows a bunch of that stuff.
That was smooth, Barbara. That was very smooth. I didn't even know we were leading up to one. You were just like, boom.
Isn't that great?
That was good.
CharlieForHillsdale.com. It is, and send your kids to Hillsdale. They'll love the Lord. They'll pursue truth. They'll understand beauty, and they'll be filled
when I was
with
at
wonder.
I'm going to give somebody a shout out. Stefan Kleinhens. He was an intern for us, and then sort of became a reporter when I was at One America News. And he was a Hillsdale guy. Mm-hmm. And actually, when I was talking at one point, when he was coming towards the end of his internship and he was going back to school, I wanted to say, look, man, I'm a dad now. Can you just tell me, what did your parents do? Because you just came out right? You know, everything that's going on in the country, everything that's going on in the world. But he's just smart, got
the
his head on straight.
Hillsdale College.
And he went to Hillsdale. And so I'm like, okay.
It's because Hillsdale developed the full human being, which is what college does not do today, even the conservative colleges. Hillsdale talks about the soul, talks about the magnanimous man, courage, what it means to be a full human being. I'm so blown away.
So you mean what colleges were founded to do originally?
To be. Jack, yeah. I'm going to take you to Hillsdale at some point. You will be blown away, and they got a really good Catholic community there too.
Hang out with my boy Anton.
Yeah, Michael Anton.
Oh, yeah.
He is the man. CharlieForHillsdale.com to check it out. Okay, Jack, why are his numbers going down, and why does the Biden regime not care?
Okay. Well, number one, his numbers aren't going down. It's the perception of him as going to where it should have always been. Right. Remember, Joe Biden was a creation of the media. Nobody wanted Joe Biden to be president back in 2019. Right. He was never pushed up as someone that anybody organically wanted. But he was basically the last man in the room after these sort of, you know, Kamala Harris drops out. By the way, Charlie, you and I both got as many primary votes and electoral college votes as Kamala Harris. Zero. Because she dropped out. But Joe Biden's the last man standing, the last man in the room. He ends up kind of getting it by default. He benefits from Mark Zuckerberg and all this activity. And then people find, remember the entire campaign, but he's in his basement the whole time, doesn't even do like any actual public events, or they're in their trucks. It's this weird dystopian Hunger Games kind of stuff going on. So his numbers are where they should have always been because people are finally getting a good look at him. Like the bloom is off the rose. The media can only fake these things for so long. So a psychological operation can only run for as long as you're not really paying that much attention to it. The minute it gets scrutiny, like Russiagate or any one of these things, it falls apart completely. Mm-hmm. That's what you're seeing with Joe Biden. That's why people call him the Titanic behind his back in the White House. And who are those people calling him Titanic behind the back of his White House? That's Kamala Harris. So I've talked about this. We talk about it on Human Events Daily pretty frequently. We call it the shade war. The shade war between Team Kamala and Team Biden. And Team Kamala is poised to take the presidency. They want to take the reins. Look, the people in government know.
So you're saying there's an internal coup that could be happening in the White House?
I don't even think it's a coup necessarily. I think it's just they've got Biden for as long as they, as long as he can. He fell asleep at his nephew's wedding in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. You know, chin to chest, you know, got up and wanted to chaperone his brother's sandwich. And then, look, you've got Kamala Harris out there putting out these ridiculous videos with child actors. She doesn't care. She doesn't care how she's perceived because she knows that she's going to become president by default. Selected, not elected, our first female president. And by the way, they're even discussing changes they want to make to the cabinet and who she'd like to pick as a vice president.
Well, maybe it'll be Pete Buttigieg, who has been MIA. I want to cut this. I'm going to keep this conversation going about the shade war happening in the White House as the regime falls apart and unfortunately the country alongside it. Hey, everybody. I hate to say it, but food shortages are now a reality and you need to prepare for this. Charlie Kirk here. The smartest thing you can do right now is get a 3-month emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. They're the nation's largest emergency food company, serving millions of Americans for almost 14 years. I use them to prepare and you need to too. And guess what? You can save $100 on their 3-month emergency food kit just in time before the holiday panic. There's something happening out here, everybody, and it's not good and you need to prepare. So you get a wide variety of breakfast, lunches, dinners, drinks, and snacks, over 2,000 calories a day. Go to preparewithkirk.com right now and save $100 per 3-month kit. You can't beat this price. Order now from preparewithkirk.com. That's preparewithkirk.com. Save $100 on a 3-month emergency food kit today. They arrive in unmarked boxes. Save $100 on a 3-month emergency food kit. I use this service, and you guys should too. Amazing company, preparewithkirk.com. Preparewithkirk.com. Be prepared, everybody. Preparewithkirk.com. I've seen Jack talk about the shade war. I'm really interested in knowing more about Jill Biden versus Kamala. What's the dynamic like?
Oh, it's huge.
Build that out more. So Marquise huge. From the Bronx. Thank you. And thank you for subscribing to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Go ahead, Jack.
There you go. Yeah, so the shade war has been going on. I mean, we all kind of know that Kamala Harris, of course, was nobody else's pick either. However, in the wake of George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter movement, Joe Biden was kind of in a box. He had to choose someone who was African-American. And then so Kamala Harris was the one. A lot of the media, a lot of the elites have been pushing her early on. Remember, very early on, she did that town hall with Jake Tapper just out of nowhere. Nobody was talking about Kamala. And suddenly CNN is feeding her on the entire audience saying, oh, Kamala's going to be amazing. She's going to be great. Very, very not good on her feet, obviously. But like Hillary Clinton in many ways, she's kind of the California version of Hillary Clinton, where she plays the inside game. She understands what's going on. She plays people against each other in, you know, the inside politics, the office politics, the palace intrigue, if you will. I mean, look, she went from somebody who was a staffer in San Francisco all the way up to being the senator from San Francisco. And, you know, people want to talk about how she did it. But my point is she did it. She made it happen. Right. That's ambition. That's 100% ambition. This is what she has dedicated her life to. So when I wanted to go to Joe and say, you know, Joe, you're not supposed to put someone as your vice president that you know will betray you the minute they get the chance, right? You know, with Trump and Pence, you never had that. With Bush and Cheney, and obviously with Obama and Biden, right? Biden was never a threat to anybody. By the way, Charlie, did you notice that comment, by the way, that Biden made very early on when he said, you know, this is the first time I'm in the White House residence? Do you remember when he said that? And I remember thinking, wait. Why is nobody analyzing that a little bit more? You were in the White House for 8 years, right? So the vice president lives in the Naval Observatory, which is up towards Rock Creek in Washington, D.C., and the president lives in the White House. But that means for all of those 8 years, Barack Obama never once invited you to dinner, right? That was your place in the Obama-Biden White House. You weren't even invited to dinner.
For 8 years.
Dinner, breakfast, hey, let's grab a coffee, Joe. No, none of it, right? That was his role. It's kind of It's actually kind of hilarious to me. So never was a threat to anybody. And he's window dressing. He's absolute window dressing Kamala Harris. And so, by the way, the people around Joe Biden. So Jill Biden, of course, is the one who's propping him up. She's the one who woke him up at the wedding. You know, she gets kind of stern with him because he gets groggy. He gets a little cranky. And so she kind of snaps him back in place. And then Ron Klain, of course, is chief of staff. And then, as you can imagine, Jen Psaki. These are sort of the leaders of Team B, Team Biden. And they know what's happening. And so one of the things that they do to try to trip up Kamala Harris, I think you know where I'm going with this, they give her all the no-win situations. So what do?
The
they
border.
Give her the border. They give her the economy. They were talking about giving her COVID response. They wanted to give her Afghanistan, right? You know, and you get this comment from her, you're not going to put that crap on me, right? They know that she is the freight train coming, mm-hmm. and they're on the side of the Titanic, and there's not much more you can do about that. However, notice that when Kamala Harris brought on her new strategic communications director, who did she hire? The brother-in-law of Jen Psaki. So as I've been kind of reading the tea leaves on this palace intrigue, I've said, you know, I wonder if that's a little bit of an olive branch between Team K and Team B, or is it Jen Psaki wondering, yeah, I'd like, she said that she's going to leave after 1 year because she's got little kids. And by the way, I applaud that. I think that's great if she actually wants to go back and spend time with her kids. I think
she'll be a cable news contributor.
That's wonderful.
2 months, though.
But I think she's going to be a cable news contributor, and she wants to be in tight because she knows where the chips are falling. She knows what's happening. She wants to be in tight with Kamala. That's why you see the hire of her brother-in-law with Kamala Harris. Folks, look, you know, it's funny. Vice tried to do a hit on me once when they said, you know, when I was in the military, I was in the IC, I didn't have a public Twitter account or anything. But what I did is I ran a Game of Thrones blog for years and years. And, you know, I've read the book series like 5 times and student history. But I say, if you haven't read the actual Game of Thrones books, I don't think you can understand DC properly until you understand what's going on. And this was true under the Trump administration. And it's 10 times more true under the Biden administration, because you've got Cersei's and you've got Lannisters and Littlefingers and all the rest of it. And, you know, obviously the TV show ended in a massive failure. But, you know, just understanding the dynamics, like, to be clear, folks, it's not always ideological. A lot of this, it's a greed, it's human nature, it's avarice, right? These are some of the sins that people give into. That's part of humans. It's original sin. That's your sinful nature. That's man has fallen. But understanding the Hobbesian dynamics of humanity, then when you're put into that pressure, you're put into a place like the White House, mm-hmm. all of that comes out tenfold.
Human nature is nasty.
Well, I should say,
and short.
I should say, when you put people who don't have faith, who don't have religion, who are not following Christianity,
they follow the prince. That's
you know, says that he's Catholic. Right now, they follow. Yeah, they're Machiavelli. Right. Joe Biden says he's Catholic. He's going to meet with the Pope, and I say, great. They can talk about abortion testing of vaccines together.
Yeah, we have. I'm not going to make a Catholic joke.
It's okay, Charlie.
Can
you can
that?
Make a Catholic
joke.
Can you
joke. Bless it? You have two non-Catholics
Patria, Filii, Spiritus Sancti. Amen.
If only the Pope was Catholic. Okay, email us your thoughts.
Well, he's Jesuit first.
At charliekirk.com. And I say this is actually a pro-Catholic evangelical. Legitimately, I have a lot of respect for Catholics. The obvious disagreements, and I'm not Catholic. All right, this is a good question. Sherman from Grand Rapids. I commonly say, just as some background, because the references in the question, be the same person in public that you are in private. Because stop pretending to be somebody that you're not. So if you are in private a conservative, be a conservative in public. Charlie, you always say that you should be the same person in public that you are in private. I agree. But what does it look like to be a good person in private so that you carry over that good behavior publicly? I hear Jack talk about his years of sobriety. I hear you about the need to explore big ideas and always be constantly learning. Can the two of you just expand on what it looks like to be a good person, specifically a good man in today's day and age? Sherman from Grand Rapids.
It's kind of an open-ended question, but I'd go back to the Gospels where, you know, we're taught to be in the world, but not of the world, right? So the idea that when people meet you, that you can talk them, I can make cultural references to like Game of Thrones and Harry Potter and Star Wars and everything else. But when you meet them, when you meet someone, or I should say when they meet you rather, that they should come off with a sense of that person is grounded in something mm-hmm. different, in something that's a little bit different than what's pumped onto TV every day.
What has your sobriety meant for your life? Not drinking.
So, yeah, for me early on, and I wasn't someone, you know, I didn't do AA. I never considered myself an alcoholic. But it got to a point where I said, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm totally done
Why?
With this. And
why'd you get to that point?
You know, I've told some stories about this before, but I had a friend who, you know, I had a friend who got arrested over it, and I saw the way that it basically ruined his life. And this was mm-hmm. this was early on, early 20s, and I saw how just so many doors were closed to him, were completely closed by after what happened. And I said, you know, for my life, looking at it, it's just not worth it. It's just, it's not worth even going down that road. And plus, I get to wake up every morning feeling amazing mm-hmm. right now, and not just because I sleep on my pillows, which I do.
Promo code Kirk. By the way,
there's another promo code out there that people can
not
use,
on this show,
but not on this show. But seriously, we do sleep on my pillows actually, and the toppers and the sheets. But my wife loves them. Seriously, I have not no ass.
The slippers
she
are
really
terrific.
I don't have
are.
The slippers yet. I don't have the slippers yet.
Promo
the
code Kirk is the only way to go.
Yeah. Okay. You have your mental. The way I look at it is this. The way I look at it is this. Parable of talents, right? Parable of talents is that the idea from behind that is that God gives you your talents. God mm-hmm. gives you your gifts. He doesn't give them to you so you can bury them under the ground.
And the talents were a currency.
And hide them.
But you're right.
Right, it is
it
currency.
Applies
right,
perfectly
right, right.
for the English term, too. You're right.
And so I look at it and I say, I've been given whatever gifts I've been given, whatever meager gifts I've been given by God, and this is something that dilutes them. It's something that affects your brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. It's something that affects your health. This doesn't seem like I'm being a good steward of God's talents if I'm doing that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of drinking at all. I'm not morally opposed to it. I am morally opposed to drunkenness, which the Bible speaks out against.
Correct.
And so
I've got I just hit 16 years.
16 years without a drink. That's a big deal.
16 years, yeah.
And you've seen your life improve because of that.
100%.
Yeah, I tell people a lot, especially young people, I say I'm not saying never take a drink again, but if you can't go 3 months without a drink, you got a problem.
Well, you look at it this way, too, and it just becomes a massive cope, right? It becomes this cope for, and I always hear this phrase from people, and they say, oh, I need a drink. Oh, man. And I said, where does that come from? Why are you using alcohol as a crutch in your life?
Yes.
You know, are you so wound up? Are you accepting, right? You can find inner peace in life.
That's
you
right.
You can find that through a relationship with God. You can find that through the church. You can find that from reading your Bible. If you find inner peace, then chaos is the world, man. The world's always going to be crazy. That's kind of the point, right?
That's correct.
So if you're using, so don't put alcohol as your peace, as your crutch. And when I hear people say that phrase, it always kind of, I don't know, never sits right
well,
with
it's
me.
Also become a kind of social thing. I mean, I was at a thing with my wife. And
if you don't do it, you get
well,
looked
yeah, and
at.
I haven't drank in a long time, and
oh, yeah?
only in family situations.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't.
Okay.
You know, I don't think you know much about my. I have a reputation for not drinking in the political world. Almost everyone drinks, and again, I'm not morally opposed to it. I can't even remember the last time I took a drink, honestly, and I'd have to think about it.
That's cool.
But we were at a event where everyone was drinking, and it became kind of like the center of conversation. Like, why aren't you drinking? What's wrong with you? Why not
right.
this? And you kind of have to almost be, you have to like draw the line, be like, why do you care so much about me drinking? And it really kind of is this thing where you want to proselytize other people to drink.
Right. So I've been in situations to kind of, you know, I'll grab like a soda and have that in my hand. So people kind of think, oh, it must be a mixed drink or something to kind of get myself out of that. Or there's also been times, I remember I was in Korea once, on a military, you know, sort of visit with, you know, I was there as representing U.S. Navy, and then the Korean Navy was there, and we were at this dinner with this Korean admiral, and he was like, and everybody was doing around, and they wanted you to do a shot and then bang your head into the table and then drink a beer. And this was like the big thing that was going on, and it was like a way to show loyalty. And so he asked the Americans to do it, he asked the Koreans to do it. And I said, well, actually, I don't drink, as a matter of fact. So I understand that you guys, I mean, that's great that you're showing your loyalty through this, but you know, that's just not something that I do. And so he looked at me and he said, or are you religious? And I said, yes, I am. What are you? I'm a Christian. He looked at me and said, you're a good Christian.
Yeah. And I want to be clear that some people say, well, Jesus drank wine and all this. I'm happy to go through that. That's true. It was also a lot more watered down alcohol content than what we're used to today.
And they also didn't have ethanol back then.
That's true. And also what we would be considered as even hard drink, they did not even have the ability to create fermented wine as hard drink as like whiskey would be today. I can get into that. Again, I'm not against drinking from a moral perspective because the Bible does allow for that. But drunkenness has no tolerance at all whatsoever in the Bible. I want to talk about what it means to live a good and full life. Hey, everybody. I want you to imagine over 100,000 Americans losing their jobs. Well, you could stop imagining because it's reality, everybody. Since 2015, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches in the United States have shut down. Why? because foreign meat is stealing their business and robbing you of the quality and flavor you deserve. China has destroyed the American economy through dumping products, and they've also waged war on American ranchers. It's time to stick it to China, and that's what Good Ranchers does so well. They exist to support local American farms that help you make great American meals. Together, they want to restore the American ranch in your meals to the former glory. Get the beef, chicken, and seafood that cannot be imported or matched at goodranchers.com. Did you know that the product of USA tag has been stolen by foreign countries? They process their meat here and then label it like it came from America fraudulently. Because of these labeling laws that favor foreign imported meat, over 100,000 independent American farms and ranches have closed since 2015. Good Ranchers is here to put America first at the dinner table, and the ranchers that have worked to raise the meat we eat. They send you a box. Everyone listening to this needs to eat and feed their family. And if you want to support our program, if you like the Charlie Kirk Show, you can kill two birds, one stone. Buy really good meat and get food because you have to eat anyway, and support our program at goodranchers.com/Charlie right now and save $20 off, or better yet, subscribe and save the box of mouth-watering meats. I'm telling you, they send us these meats and there is a fight over who gets the perfectly marbled filet mignon or the marinated chicken. It is a beautiful sight when the box of meats arrive at our office. Our mouths are watering. The children begin singing. Everything just seems a little bit lighter and brighter. In fact, the day gets better when the Good Ranchers box arrives, because you know, with the beautiful Phoenix weather, you can watch some college football, throw a couple steaks on the grill, turn up the volume, and enjoy being an American, because you're eating American meat, not Chinese meat, not Argentinian meat, not Vietnamese meat, not Iranian meat, not Egyptian meat, but instead American meat. So save on each box of mouth-watering American meats. Go to goodranchers.com/Charlie. They've been amazing partners. I'm such a big believer in this company. Use promo code Charlie at checkout. Goodranchers.com/Charlie. They send you this box of meat that you can feed your family and also support this program, as you guys know how hard we are working to save the country. Goodranchers.com/Charlie. Suspect in killing of UK Conservative MP Sir David Amness is of Somali origin, and suspected motivation is Islamist, from The Independent. Let's keep talking about this. Freedom@charliekirk.com emailed us, what does it mean to live a good life? So Jack, in today's time, all the chaos around you, all the darkness, what does it mean to live a good life in private life, not just in public life?
Well, so, you know, I kind of go back. I really am a big fan. I don't know if I'd consider myself a Thomist at this point, but Thomas Aquinas. Yeah.
I'm a big Aquinas fan.
And
Summa Theologica.
So Summa Theologica, if you read it, what he's doing was he was trying to basically take the principles of Christianity and then combine them with like Plato and Aristotle, right? So take those values and put them all together with the teachings of Christ. And so, So of course, Plato and Aristotle, they talk about talent, they talk about potentiality, they talk about actualization. And what Aquinas did was he said, God gives you, just as I was saying in the last bit, he gives you those talents, he gives you your potentiality. Of course, that comes from God. That's part of your creation.
Yes.
So, you know, the fully actualized Jack Posobiec and the fully actualized Charlie Kirk are going to be different things, just the same way, you know, and this even gets into politics. You talk about, like, you know, the rights of the individual, rights of the collective, and the idea that you can't have equality because everyone is different, because everyone is going to have different unique talents. But the idea, though, is that your life is a journey of being able to realize your full potentiality for good, and that in achieving so along the proper path actually brings you closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where some of Theologica goes. And so this is where myself, you know, becoming a father over the past couple of years has really kind of changed my perspective on so many of these things. And it also gives you skin in the game, right? You become, you're the head of a household now. You have these children, and you have to raise them. And so it makes you want to go back to your own teaching, to your own traditions, to your own religion, and say, do I understand this stuff? Do I really feel that I'm properly trained and able to actually pass this on? Am I doing the right things? And so that's something where, you know, for us as Catholics, that's, we're going to Latin Mass more now. That's also a huge thing with like these lockdowns and a lot of the more modernist parishes, when they said, I never in my life thought that I would have I never even occurred to me that I thought that I would ever walk up to a church with my wife, with my children and see a sign on the door that says church full. You really mean there's, what you mean there's no room at the inn? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the opposite. It's the complete opposite of what a church is for. And I think it drove a lot of people to Latin Mass because something with, what they do in the original rite, the traditional rite, it's you have the incense, you have the Gregorian chants. It's in Latin, which is, of course, a higher language. It's connection to the transcendent. It's a reminder that this is not about the here and now. You're not playing guitar in the church, right? It's about connection to the transcendent, the spiritual, the supernatural. That's something that I think a lot of Western Christianity has lost. Eastern Christianity actually has been pretty good about this, Orthodox Christianity. And so reminding people, by the way, this is the way Mass was held for hundreds, thousands of years, right, prior to Vatican II. So for us, that's been a huge boon in that. But for me, you know, looking at it, to take it back, is it's living up to that, but then also remembering that you have to walk that path. And it's kind of like, what I don't understand, you know, you say God lays out a path for us, but we also have free choice, but then he also has unconditional love. How's that work? Or I say, well, if you become a parent, you know exactly what that's mm-hmm. like, right? You know, that's why he's God the Father. So you know, I love my kids, but that doesn't mean they don't make mistakes. That doesn't yes. mean that they make decisions that are faulty. But then when they come back, when the prodigal son comes back, that's why it's so important, because they did it of their own volition. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, unfortunately, you know, we went through, went through potty training. We did go through potty training with our oldest son, and ooh, that's fun. That is fun. And it's a struggle. It's absolutely a struggle. And so, you know, carrot and stick approach, of course, you know, stickers and, you know, treats and the whole nine yards, but every once in a while, timeouts, and hey, you're going to have to practice this 10 times. So you do also use this struggle, right? You mm-hmm. have to institute that ability of struggle and the idea of no. Right. You need to be able to say no. And God says no sometimes.
They say no because he loves us.
And it's because of love. Right. You cannot have mercy without judgment. These are two aspects. And I think a lot of progressive Christians want to forget about judgment. They don't even want to act like it exists.
Well, they don't even want to act as if justice exists. And we're going to talk about justice. And we actually touched on this in a previous episode of biblical justice versus secular justice. Jack, you see a lot of young people struggling to find their place in the world, trying to understand how to navigate, you know, the chaos that is life. You commonly say, be a rebel, you know, reject modernity, embrace antiquity. What do you mean by that?
Reject freedom. Or I don't know, sorry, reject modernity, embrace tradition. No, I mean
Reject licentiousness.
Or licentiousness. I also do the be a rebel, start a family.
Yes.
Which is huge. Congrats on the wedding, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you.
I don't know if I said that to
Appreciate
you
that.
In person yet. Maybe I have.
More young people need to get married.
Just get married. Get married and have kids, right? Once you get married and have kids, life makes a lot more sense at the same time, because you realize, like, oh, this is the point.
Yes.
Right. I get it. And it also gives you a sense of realizing that, you know, I remember when the first time I held my first son, we have two kids. We have a 3-year-old and a 10-month-old. They're both boys. Want more. We're going to keep going. But the first time I remember holding him, thinking, you know, this is the future.
Mm-hmm.
I'm holding the future in my hands. And so what if this is the future, what does that make me? Right. And so you realize that you're just a link. You're a link in a chain. At the end of the day, you're a link in a chain. And this is the great chain of human history, of spiritual history. What does that mean? What does that mean for your place in the world, your place in the cosmos? And look, at some point, every single one of us is going to meet our creator. And God is going to stand there and he's going to say, look at what I gave you. He's going to tell me, I gave you this platform. I gave you this ability to speak to millions of people. What did you do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Did you bring people to me? Did you bring people to me? Like, I get that. Yeah, yeah. You weren't perfect. Right. And then the devil will be there and he'll repeat every single thing that I've done in my life, from, you know, taking a candy bar all the way up to, you know, anything else. But God will say, did you bring people to me?
That's right.
And that is going to be the point at the end of it. Did you use your public life to do that? And did you use your private life? How did you raise your children? Did you raise them to be godly? Did you raise them to follow in the traditions of the church and the traditions of a people? Did you raise them to be good? Did you raise them to be moral? What did you do? And again, like, what was your, because remember, and Jesus talks about this a lot, it's about what's in your heart, right? It's about mm-hmm. what's in your heart, and then how that transposes itself into into the world. And so when he's talking, this is one thing when, you know, when he talks a lot of, we just had in last week. Yeah, it was. It was last week. The story about, it's easier for, a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven. And so a lot of
or
people.
A lover of money.
Right.
Very clear.
It's and so, right. Aramaic, and so what, said. And this is also paired with, and you see like the socialists and the leftists talk about this a lot, and they'll say, oh, well, you know, the love of money is the root of all evil. Right. No. The love of money.
The worship of money.
That's the correct. Worship yes. of money. You cannot worship God and mammon, right? And so understand that he's not saying don't be, successful in life, right? That's mm-hmm. not what it's saying whatsoever. And remember, by the way, I would say this to the leftists, to the socialists, to the communists. I believe there's a phrase about coveting thy neighbor's goods
that's correct.
As well.
Well, socialism violates 2 out of the 10 commandments. Don't want your people, your neighbor's stuff and take
right.
your people's stuff.
Right, exactly. And so you can't have, like, you have to understand what they're going for. It's not about material possessions, but it's also not about wanting and living for material
that's
possessions.
Correct.
You
yes.
need to live for something beyond. You need to live for something transcendent. You need to stand
for the divine.
For something.
A new article out today. Having a child is the grandest act of climate destruction.
Amazing. Yes. Destroy the climate then. Destroy it all.
That is a question. Should we be a people-centered?
Who put that article?
Connor just sent it. I don't know what publication
it sounds
is,
like so. It sounds like, I think I saw it. I think it was like a CNN or something.
Having a child is
the greatest act of climate destruction.
I'm gonna get this.
Well, then they must love China because China for 25 years had a one-child policy. But that's interesting because China's climate did not become so well in those last 25 years while they were doing the one-child policy with the forced abortions across the country, where they were demanding that people wouldn't be up, or if you had a female baby, that they'd be placed or either aborted. Number one, they actually, because they were aborting so many female babies in China, that ultrasounds became outlawed. So you know how they talk about back alley abortions
yes.
in the U.S. It's kind of apocryphal. It wasn't really this big widespread thing like the abortion.
And even the guy who promoted the lie admitted that.
Right.
It
right.
wasn't
that
thousands.
That's
it was
total
like
propaganda.
Dozens. Yes,
yeah, it was
right.
like one doctor.
Yes,
a
that's right.
Things.
But he corrected himself later in life. That's right.
And so in China, though, I remember walking down this street in Shanghai and seeing this before I was still learning Chinese at the time, and there was this phone number up and there was a thing on there, and I said, what? And there was a B. I said, what is that? I was with my Chinese friend, and they said, oh, that's for an ultrasound. I said, what do you mean it's for an ultrasound? You call that number, you can go get an ultrasound. Well, why don't you just go to the hospital? They won't do it. Why not? Because they outlawed it, because too many female babies were being killed, that they outlawed mm-hmm. ultrasounds. So you have to go to a back alley ultrasound.
That's right.
If you want to find out what's going on. That's China. That's technocracy. That's nihilism writ large. That if you want to see nihilism, go to China. You'll see it all day long. They do not care about human rights. All they care is the power of the regime and the success of the regime.
We're going to talk about China some more. But Jack, talk about the spiritual battle that you believe that's raging in our country. Because you keep on tweeting about be careful against witches.
Don't trust witches.
And so
don't trust witches, folks.
Is the spiritual war real?
I think it is a real spiritual war. And I think that, you'll hear people say, when I'm with the evangelicals, they always say, are you saved? Or they always say you're saved. And so I always say, well, saved from what?
Right, well, damnation. What? Yeah.
Right, damnation. But also there are things in this world that can lead you to damnation. And what does that include? That's witches, that's the occult, that's the demonic, that's the temptation of sin, all of these things writ large. And we live in a society today that's been overly secularized. We prop up things like, I'm sorry, but Disney and Harry Potter, this is the Media Matters clip, by the way. Disney and Harry Potter have almost become secular religions in the United States mm-hmm. today. So Dustin Baranja, that one's for you. I really mean that, though. Star Wars has become like this. That's actually why we're raising our household to be Star Wars free. No Star Wars in the house. It's not welcome. We're not doing it.
Because it's spiritually questionable or why?
No, I don't think it's spiritually questionable, but I think that the movement that's built around it has become an identity movement. So people start to identify as a Star Wars fan the same way they identify as a Disney fan. I'm not saying that anyone who watches those things, mm-hmm. by the way, this will be the part that Media Matters then clips off. I don't think that you can watch those things and enjoy them, but there is a certain a certain band of people, a certain percentage that actually put that as their personal identity, and it becomes a form of worship. Mm-hmm. This is because, by and large, they've taken the transcendent, they've taken the church, they've taken God, they've taken Christianity completely out of the public sector. But everyone is always looking for something like that. So what do you replace it with? Well, you got to have something. So we're going to have Marvel movies. We're going to have Harry Potter. We're going to have Star, whatever it is, right? Whatever it is. There's other stuff out there as well. And so we need to get, but people realize that stuff is hollow. It's completely shallow. And then you also have people, by the way, that dabble in the occult. You have a thing out there in the world right now called the Satanic Temple. They're verified on Twitter. They are suing the state of Texas over the abortion ban, which isn't really an abortion ban. It's a heartbeat abortion ban. And they're saying that abortion is their sacrament. Well, certainly isn't the first time that Satanists have used child sacrifice as a sacrament. But
and this is a real thing. This is not exaggeration.
No. I'm not like, this isn't like a yuckity yuck podcast on a Friday kind of thing. This is if you go
like
to this,
it's a legitimate organization.
Yeah, it's an actual organization. And so what it is, it's atheists being, telling themselves and telling everyone else that they are being satanic, ironically, to make fun of Christians, to persecute Christians, and then to fight whenever someone stands up, wants to make a moral stand on something like, oh, I don't know, the killing of children, and saying we don't want abortion anymore. Well, the Satanic Temple says it's our religion, and one of our sacraments is abortion. And so they're trying to use to subvert the purpose of our laws and subvert the purpose of our Constitution by saying it's a religion. And so I actually went to their website, and I believe you should have said, I'm doing sign of the cross on like every click that I go through on this thing, where they talk through, you know, actual rights. They actually have a right of abortion.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because they had to write out what they were going to do for their, you know, for this sacrament, or else, you know, the court would come back and say, well, what do you do? What, tell us about your sacrament, right? So they wrote this all out. Then there's tenets of Satanism, and you're supposed to repeat the satanic prayer. And I look at this and I say, you know, I do believe that there is a spiritual war. And what better way, by the way, for the enemy to create, you know, the worship of Satan, to create something demonic than something like this, and just saying it's ironic and saying it's just a big joke and it's a laugh on Christians. Meanwhile, you've got people who will say, hey, let's go to seances, let's go to fortune tellers, let's mess around with Ouija boards. At mm-hmm. the end of the day, when you're playing around with something like that, you are trying to seek power outside of God.
Amen. Look, I often talk about the crushing debt and lack of jobs that come with the broken college system in our country, and how entering a trade or vocational school can provide great career opportunities where your skills will always be in demand. I want to talk to you about the American Institute of Non-Destructive Testing. If you go to trainingndt.com, that's trainingndt.com, you can learn how to have an opportunity to work in industries such as aerospace, oil, gas, nuclear, and alternative energy, as a technician performing critical inspections that make our world a safer place. The American Institute of Non-Destructive Testing provides 93% job placement, and graduates enjoy a starting wage of about $50,000 a year. You can earn $60,000, $70,000, or even $80,000 yearly within a couple years as a technician. Their program consists of 6 months online education followed by 3 weeks at the American Institute campus using state-of-the-art inspection equipment such as ultrasonics, capturing x-rays, and producing magnetic fields to inspect critical components to ensure their safety and reliability. If you're looking for a career shift, or if you are in high school and you're not sure what you want to do, I want you to know that Don Booth, the CEO, is a patriot, and his whole team cares deeply about the future of every graduate. Go to trainingndt.com to learn about this exciting and rewarding career. Check it out, everybody. Trainingndt.com. Check it out. It's a wonderful program. Trainingndt.com. Thought crime incoming, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. We got a question. Hey, Charlie, I saw your thoughts on saying that empathy is not Christian. What do you mean by that? Well, Jack, I'll let you break the glass here, where tolerance is not a biblical idea.
Tolerance is not a Christian virtue.
Tell us why.
Absolutely not. So, you know, I see progressive Christians get into this a lot where they'll say, oh, well, you know, God don't make mistakes, right? Remember, that's what you're always told. God don't make mistakes. Well, no, God made you, but you have free will, so you make mistakes, mm-hmm. right?
And that's, your nature, as you know, you have
because of the fall from the garden and original sin, the apple, et cetera, et cetera. Like, we make mistakes. This is our nature. And so, yes, God doesn't make mistakes, but again, you're not God. You're part of the system. system. Mm-hmm. You're part of this. So you do make mistakes. So empathy is not a Christian virtue. Tolerance is not a Christian virtue. So here's what I would say to the progressive Christians out there that try to push this stuff. I say, look, it's not that, well, they'll say, but Jesus went and sat down with Mary Magdalene and he sat down with tax collectors. And if you think tax collectors are bad now, you should have seen them in Roman times, by the way. These guys were, I mean, just brutal. It's absolutely brutal. It was kind of like a mafia organization.
Yeah, they were savages. Yeah.
It's kind of like a mafia organization. Yeah. Very Tony Soprano when it came, because they were paid by a percentage of what they got off of people. So, and that continued throughout the Middle Ages, by the way. And so the idea that Jesus would meet with these people, they say, well, Jesus sat down with sinners. And of course, you go where the sinners are, right? But here's the difference. Jesus also said, go and sin no more. So tolerance means I will go to you. I will be sympathetic to you. And I can sit down with you, but because I'm trying to change your behavior, because I don't want you to sin anymore. So the way I kind of encapsulate it is Jesus will meet you as you are, but Jesus will never leave you where you were.
Yes.
As you were.
And so there's a big difference in empathy. This is why people need to learn Latin and Greek. We were just talking about
it. Gotta learn it.
And I am by no means fluent, but I know enough to be dangerous. I know my prefixes and my suffixes, and I know what they mean. So let's go to empathy and then sympathy.
Ora pro nobis peccatoribus.
Is that, I don't know if that's Latin or Polish.
Pray for sinners.
That's too quick.
That's Latin.
Yeah, shows that I'm not Catholic. But empathy and then sympathy are two different words. So M meaning in pathos.
In pathos.
With feelings, emotion.
Right.
There's many different filler English words for that. And so empathy is nowhere in the Bible. Being in someone's feelings? Absolutely not. You're trying to tell me that when Eric Rudolph did the Centennial Park bombing, where Richard Jewell got unfairly maligned and accused, we had to be in the feelings?
Atlanta Journal-Constitution, by the way. Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the absolute worst
they should have went
big city paper in the country. You think the New York Times, you got the New York Times right here?
AJC is really bad.
You think New York Times is bad? AJC is absolutely the worst.
The journalist who actually wrote that story about Richard Jewell died. And so did Richard Jewell, the woman, I can't remember her name. Anyway, so empathy in the pathology, nowhere in the Bible. Sympathy beside the feelings, or looking beside and
simpatico.
Looking at them. Right, simpatica, symmetry, symbolism, that's where we get all the English words for that. The prefix sim, which means with or beside.
Why should I learn Latin, man? Why should I do that?
Yeah. Right?
You could actually understand the words you're using now. Like, English is a lower language. Latin is a higher language. If you understand the language that it's derived from, and Greek, by the way, when you understand basic etymology.
Sympathy and empathy are Greek.
They're Greek, right.
But Latin is an extension of the Greek language. In some ways, not always. Latin is the basis of many of the Western tradition. Greek and Latin are beautiful languages. And, I mean, a great example is this. And actually, you know what? Catholics don't know this as well. What are the Greek words for love?
I don't know if there's eros, agape, and
agape,
yeah.
Storge, phileo,
and storge, yeah. Phileo.
So in evangelical world, it's like people can rattle them off.
Oh, cool.
It's in evangelical world, it's like 101 canned kind of sermon for pastors, being like, for God so loved the world, He gave His Son. And differentiating the different types of love, right? Which is the Greeks had like 10 words for love. The most common four, which is phileo, brotherly love, storge, love of mother and child, eros, romantic love, and agape, sacrificial love or replacement love, which is what for God so agape'd the world. And Catholics just don't know that as well. It's just not enough time in a homily to explain that.
Yeah,
kidding. So is that Vatican I Mass?
That's the original
but
Mass.
But does the priest have his back to you when he's...
No, the priest has his face towards God.
Well, that's what I'm saying, the back towards you, the attendee.
But you're looking at it the wrong way. His face
that's
is towards
Mel
God.
Mel Gibson's accusation, not mine.
No. His face is towards
okay,
God.
I got it. But
That's the twist.
It's a syllogism. It's saying the same thing.
I don't think so. I don't think so, because people get the wrong idea. It's we all have our faces to God because it's a sacrifice and worship to God.
I would prefer Latin Mass if I could understand anything they were saying. I'm not a Catholic.
Well, they give you a booklet.
Do they?
Yeah, they give you a booklet.
I've never been
both. Yeah.
But
Charlie...
Vatican II.
We're going.
Was 60s or
70s? If I'm doing
right?
The Relief Factor, you're coming to Latin Mass.
Was Vatican II 60s or Vatican II 60s?
60s,
or 70s?
Yeah.
60s?
Yeah.
And that's when everything changed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when everything changed.
Every once in a while, a coffee company comes along that changes the way we think about our morning routine. Are you looking for a conservative coffee company that shares your values of freedom and liberty and not feel like you've been thrown under the bus because of your beliefs? Minutemen Coffee is that company. Bold, smooth, and never bitter. Roasted in small batches and shipped to order, Minutemen Coffee never fails to deliver on time and with the freshest roasts available. Minutemen Coffee supports our first responders, our constitutional sheriffs, and our veteran and military service women and men throughout the country of various charities. I am proud to partner with Minutemen Coffee and excited to share them with you. Minutemen Coffee subscription plans are top-notch and easy to manage on your terms. The coffee is so delicious, everybody. You won't believe it. So give them a try and use Charlie at checkout for 15% off your order. Go to MinutemenCoffee.com and get your freedom-loving coffee today. You will not be disappointed.
Getting a lot of good questions. There's a question that came. It's a long question.
I didn't even realize we were going to do this today. You know, we were just kind of like woke up and
isn't that,
you know, it wasn't a super heavy news day. And it's like,
I mean, we could talk about Pete Buttigieg, but that's not as interesting.
But it's just boring, right?
Well, you
know, he's of the world. He's of the world.
He is definitely of the world. Someone says, can you please elaborate more on sympathy versus empathy? And I will in a second. And you know what's interesting? She does say, "What can you differentiate between the Christian Catholic thing?" I think that's interesting. I am an evangelical Christian.
Okay.
And Jack, you're Catholic. And I have a lot of respect for Catholics.
100%.
I really do.
OGs. And, the OGs.
Well, don't tell that to Orthodox. Because they'll say they were the original church. It was one church before the schism.
I tell it to my Orthodox wife every day.
It depends. Yeah. Well, so there's some things that I don't have a lot of
trouble with. My wife is Orthodox,
yes,
and I'm Catholic.
No, I get that. I'm saying that the Orthodox would say they're the original.
Right, they would.
But they're both right because you were both original until the schism.
Right, and the schism, and look, I'll take flack from both sides for saying this, but I've always kind of said the schism actually was probably more predicated on the political breakup of the Roman Empire.
Into the Eastern Roman Empire.
West.
Yeah, so and the creation of Byzantium.
And the Western Roman Empire. And then
King Justinian.
Specific. So you do have a lot of politics. And the same deal with the Protestant Reformation, of course. That was very political, right? And so
good old
have,
Martin Luther.
Oh,
good guy.
Yes. Yes. The heretic.
Spirit-filled.
And he was a
priest.
Snowflakes, the snowflakes, yes, of course.
A snowflake priest.
The snowflake priest. And so you do have these, but you can't really separate the political forces from,
of course not,
you know, from the theological history. And that's all I'm trying to say. And so I always kind of joke that, you know, we got the Friends reunion, but the Orthodox Catholic reunion, that's the one we really want. And so
I think a Protestant Catholic reunion could be more possible than that. I could be.
Really?
In some ways. I don't know.
Actually, there was an Anglican bishop just, I think, yesterday,
mm-hmm,
that converted to Catholicism.
I see it happening. I know a lot of evangelical Protestants that are converting to Catholicism for a lot of different reasons.
Can I just get something out of the way here? Because I know people always ask me this. They say, well, don't you just believe everything the Pope says? And this Pope is for vaccinations.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like he's kind of a socialist.
The Pope is like at the top of my list of problems with the Catholic Church.
Talk to a conservative Catholic, you will not find someone who has more criticism of specifically this Pope. Go read Infiltration by Taylor Marshall. Go understand the problems with the Vatican, the cover-ups of the sex scandals, everything that's going on.
So let me ask you
about
that.
We lean into fixing the problem because the same way we have corruption in our government,
yes,
right, and we as conservatives try to root that out, this is the same exact thing that's going on.
No, I hear you. And I've heard all the responses. And I don't want to, like, prosecute you on this because I think there's some of the answers are kind of fair, but does it ever challenge you to say, hey, like the holy body of the church was heavily involved in covering up pedophilia? What? And also,
of course, it bothers me. Of course, it bothers me.
Yeah, well, it bothers me so much where I think that's like one of the many deal breakers I have, you know, with Catholicism, where it's like you have a social activist as Pope.
Well, it's kind of the same. It's kind of the same idea. The way I look at it is, you know, I don't particularly support the current regime that's in office in the United States, but I'm not going to tear up my U.S. citizenship. That I still believe that it's worth fighting for.
Okay. And I guess the bigger challenge I have is the entire idea of papal infallibility, which is a thing, which is when he's wearing the hat and sitting in the chair.
Well, not just sitting in the chair, but also when he's speaking what's called ex cathedra. So cathedra actually means this Latin
papal
chair.
Infallibility.
Right. So this actually means people. That chair. So people, great example of this, and we covered it on the podcast recently that I can explain from a Catholic perspective. So you had the archbishop, I should say, of military services in the U.S. come out and say, Catholic soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines can reject the vaccine based on religious exemption because of the fact that it was tested on aborted fetal lines. But people say, well, wait a minute, hold on. I thought the Pope said that they could take the vaccine. So doesn't the Pope's word countermand his? Mm-hmm. Not so. Because the Pope, when the Pope said that, when he makes a comment on any social issue, political issue of the day, he's not doing so ex cathedra. So he's doing so as the Bishop of Rome. And at the same token, his wish, the other members of the College of Bishops can disagree with
him. Has Francis said anything ex cathedra?
One of his big things that he's been trying to push is changing the death penalty. So really trying to change Catholic teaching and doctrine.
Didn't he say something with climate change as ex cathedra?
I'd have to double check.
Okay. I could be wrong. So what do you think are the biggest issues with the Catholic Church?
Well, I do. I mean,
and I'll tell you the biggest issues with evangelicalism.
I mean, the biggest issues with the Catholic Church right now is infiltration, 100%.
Infiltration by whom?
Infiltration by you name it, but forces that seek to undermine and subvert the will and the authority and the purpose and focus of the church. They spend too much time telling people. They spent the last 40 years telling people to look into the mirror instead of look to the cross. Right. That should be the sole purpose of the church, to guide people into heaven, to teach them to sacrifice and to worship God and Christ the King, and to do so through going to mass. That is the point of church, the end. And then also to ask people to forgive, you know, to understand their sins, to confess them. And something that actually I'll even throw out that I think the Orthodox Church does very well is that, you know, when you go to confession in the Orthodox Church, they will actually talk to you about your sins. And it's not just, hey, man, say a couple of Hail Marys and Our Fathers and everything's good. No, no, no. They'll say, what are you reading? They say, oh, I see you're having a problem with lust. I see you're having a problem with greed. You know, what are you reading? Like, which one of the church fathers are you reading? Which one of the saints are you, you know, are you studying? Which writings have you focused? So they'll actually try, you know, we have whole, you know, self-help sections of books and everything else, but this actually should have been the role of the priest at the parish level, right? The whole idea, by the way, you know, of the church was that it was going to be parish-led, the original mm-hmm. idea. So it wasn't necessarily going to be top-down other than in these sort of like very heady affairs of theology, right? The Pope isn't supposed to be coming into the parish and telling people how to live. Like, this is obviously wrong.
What do you think is most compelling about the evangelical Bible-believing world?
I love the fact that you guys just know the Bible chapter and verse. I love it. I have so much respect for that I can just be like, hey, what's this? Boom. Know it. Boom. Offhand. You guys put the word first, and it's beautiful and it's amazing. I also love that in a lot of – there's a huge sense of community. There's such a huge sense of community, and I've been to evangelical churches. I've seen it, that people don't just go and then leave. And in so much,
it's very comprehensive.
Yeah. Right. And this has been a problem in the Catholic Church for years, that people will go and it's like, hey, I checked it off. It's Sunday morning. Now I'm going to
get out of
here
as quickly as possible.
You know, right? Now we're going to go in the parking lot, and people are like flying out of there. And it's like, why? And this is actually something at Latin Mass you don't see, by the way. At Latin Mass, people do stay. And that's something that I think the evangelicals, you know, my uncle is an evangelical, and he, you know, Sunday, it's the whole day. It's the entire day. You know, you go in the morning, and then you're having lunch, and then maybe you're doing a Bible study in the evening. And his entire day, really his entire life, is centered mm-hmm. around the church body. And I think that's something amazing. And I think that's something that Catholics, just as from a cultural sense, need to really get back to.
Yeah, I think what evangelicals get right is in the name, evangelizing.
100%. 100%.
What I think evangelicals have trouble with, and what need focus on, number one, the slippage on social conservatism recently has been really disappointing.
Well, you have both threads, right? You do kind of have the more social conservatives, but then you have the progressives.
Yes, but you see formerly socially conservative denominations and churches that slip. And the thing about Catholicism that is, you know, compelling is, hey, it's in the teaching that, you know, marriage is one man, one woman. It's in the teaching that, you know,
right,
where life begins. So there's a constancy to that, like a constant unchanging nature.
Right. I can go back to, and this is, by the way, on the death penalty, this has been one of the things where, you know, Francis has tried to really update the church's dogma on this and totally throw out stuff that has been concrete for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to Pope after Pope after Pope that hold it up and say, well, excuse, you know, Pope Leo the Great, the death penalty.
One? There's been like 15 of them.
The great.
Oh, okay.
That the death penalty is itself pro-life. And because you don't get into this word thinking, obviously an innocent child is not the same thing as a murderer.
Yes.
Right. It's clearly like on its face, it's clearly not the same thing, but they'll try to play these word games. Oh, if you're not for life, then that means you have to be for natural, et cetera, et cetera. No, that hasn't been church teaching. Yeah. That's never been church teaching only until the modern age.
My other big critique of Catholicism, and this is not true for recent converts and it's not true for you, but there is sometimes a passive nature of people's relationship with Christ. And I don't think that's an intention of the Catholic Church, but because of not always reading the word, because of, in my personal opinion, not taking it personally in your own capacity, that there seems to always have to be a conduit, an intercessor. And Catholic would say, well, what's wrong with that, right? I think that there's something to be said that, you know, my mom was raised in the Catholic Church. Bible reading was not a widespread thing.
Yeah.
And the argument is like, well, you need a priest to be able to interpret some of these passages. I disagree. I think the Word of God is open for all people who wish to access it and will speak freely into your life.
Well, so this is where you lose some of the social conservatism, though, because when you say interpretation, it doesn't just mean like, what does this passage mean to you? It means, what does our church teach what this passage means?
And let me be clear. Evangelicals do not believe that there's an unlimited interpretation to the text, right? So it doesn't believe that Joe and Sally and Sue are all going to be able to read the book of Job and say, hey, you know what the takeaway of book of Job is? God's a mass murderer. Like, no, that's not the that's
communism. Yeah. I saw this one, you know, I watched some of these TikTok pastors and progressives. And there was this one guy, he's out of DC. I lit him up on Twitter because he was accusing Jesus of using a racial slur for the Samaritan woman.
Well, that's correct. And he said, go away, stranger, or get away from me.
Well, he was talking about
– It was the Syrophoenician woman.
Syrophoenician, yes. And it was about the scraps to the dogs.
That's correct.
And he was saying, no, Jesus wasn't calling her a dog. He was using
a
metaphor.
So, I mean, an evangelical world has plenty of theologians, right? I mean, we got plenty of them. With that being said, though, there is a disagreement in the Catholic Church. There's an underemphasis on reading the word, where we as Christians believe it's a breathing, living, not breathing, living document in the sense of the Constitution, but you read the word, it could speak to you in your very moment and be compelling and give you wisdom that is supernatural.
What we tend to argue about more is what should the teaching of the church be on this specific topic?
Yeah, and that there's a lot of agreement, I think, that's happening on that. There's just the Pope, transubstantiation, which honestly is my biggest hang up, which used to be. So, Jack, you're going to convert to evangelicalism?
Definitely not.
I tried my best.
Actually,
I didn't really try at all.
But. Come home. Return to the church.
I don't know.
No, I would love.
You got to follow Jesus Christ.
See, I would
and
love.
If you do that as a Catholic, then so
if you could bring sort of like the social conservative evangelicals and then the Orthodox, the Eastern Orthodox, who totally still, I think, are the ones who get the spirituality. Best.
Yeah,
I think
the Orthodox have an underemphasis on the Holy Spirit.
They do. This is true. But
they do believe in a triune God.
I've had it explained the good sides of that. But I mean, those guys, they get the supernatural side of it.
Yes.
They get all of that so very, very, that's what I'm talking about. They get that very, very well.
I think that there is.
And this is why I am so against people messing around with the occult. Do not screw around with that
stuff. Okay,
so
now finish with that.
No
Ouija
boards.
People do all sorts of goofy things. And people thought I was, you know, glorifying Halloween earlier. I can't stand Halloween. I think it's awful. I hate it. You might disagree, Jack. I won't have my kids participate in it. If I have anything to say about it, I might be overruled. I think it's dark. It's like very spiritually questionable. I get weird feelings. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. It's very spiritually questionable. And, you know, the idea is that it comes from All Saints Day, which is, of course, the next day, November 1st. And then so All Hallows Eve. Hallow is an old English word for meaning saint. So hallowed, right? Hallowed be thy name. So All Hallows Eve then was sort of like evolved into Halloween. And so the idea is that All Saints Day is the next day. So that's all the saints in heaven. So I think that as long as you emphasize that that's what Halloween means, the same way that, you know, there's secular Christmas, but then there's also obviously the Nativity, that you can do both as long as you're making sure to emphasize the fullness of the Christian holiday.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of a lot of kind of the spiritual.
But you see what's happened now. So I was in Salem, Massachusetts recently, and it's a cult everywhere. It's witchcraft everywhere.
Salem witch trials?
It's, well, so the, what they've turned it into now is this like mecca for witchcraft. So they have occult stores, tower readings,
now,
apothecaries.
Now, some people might think you're nuts. Witches are real things.
Oh, witchcraft is an absolute real thing.
Yeah. And so many Christians don't talk about that.
No, they really don't. And it's something where, you know, it's they'll call it Wiccan, they'll call it all sorts of other names, and they'll say, oh, it's really just these pagan folk religions, and you know, do not pray to alien gods, right? Do not pray to other gods, and that's essentially what this is.
And occultism is growing.
Occultism is completely growing. So you have. So there's sort of occult light, which is the New Age movement, and then of which yoga is a part. And then you have.
Do you think yoga is part of that? Hear that, Andrew Gordon?
I think that if you're going to yoga just doing stretches and breathing, obviously that's fine.
You know, I've heard some, and I don't have an opinion on this either way.
But if you're going, and
I've heard Christians say yoga is a gateway to this stuff.
But if you're going, it can be, absolutely can be. If you're going to yoga and you're following along with the more spiritual practices of it, then yes, that's obviously not Christian.
Because there is a spiritual element to you that can be to yoga.
Right.
And so what is the consequence of not being on your guard, as it says in First Peter, Satan roams the earth like a lion looking for those to devour.
So the consequence,
and this is stuff you and I agree on as a Catholic and as a
So this is stuff where you don't know what you're inviting in. You don't know what you're exposing
yourself
to. But
it could be more than just Ouija boards. It could be a TV show. It can be websites.
Yeah.
It can be chants. It could be
music.
Oh,
this is fun. This is what, you know,
this is real stuff. This is not.
Right. So you're exposing yourself to things. And if you're not coming to it from a Christian basis, if you're not making sure that you are completely tied to that, then you don't know, right? You don't read the Screwtape Letters, right? That's probably the greatest example I can say of this. Just read the Screwtape Letters, understand how the demonic works, how it's not, you know, it's not a little guy with a pitchfork and hooves and, you know, horns on the head, right? It's a whisper in your ear. It's a whisper in your ear that says, this doesn't matter. Just come on, even the snake, right? It's just,
yes.
Just eat the apple. Just go ahead and eat the apple. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Indulge in your flesh.
Indulge.
Yes. So Satan tries to diminish the promises of God, the protection of God, and the provision of God. Those are the three P's that Satan tries to attack. And I am getting a lot of emails from people. Charlie, the spiritual warfare is worse than ever before. Remember, Satan cannot go after your heart. Therefore, he tries to go after your mind.
Remember, Satan doesn't create evil. Satan is the absence of God. Satan wants to pull you away from God.
The usurper, the rebel, the treacherer, the serpent, the divider. I could go on.
Right.
Thankfully,
he wants
to
trick you.
Victory. And we have victory in Christ.
All day long.
And Jack and I can agree on that. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts. freedom@charliekirk.com. God bless you guys. Thank you for listening. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.